A couple of announcements. First, this just in, you may have gotten an email or you may receive an email. It says, dear user, the subject is urgent. It says, dear user, your password to your mailbox will expire in 3 days. Please click on faculty and staff upgrade to validate your mailbox. Regards, SBCC admin team. Do not click on faculty and staff upgrade. This is a phishing opportunity. We just found this out, okay? So again, it's going to be urgent to undisclosed recipients. Copy to you, I think. Dear user, your password to your mailbox will expire in 3 days. Please click on faculty and staff upgrade to validate your mailbox. Don't do that.
We can be mindful, stay in the moment, and go.
Len.
I have another thing from Andy.
That's the one.
Right, that's the one.
From Andy Harper, yeah. Okay, if you clicked on... it came from Andy. If you clicked on faculty and staff upgrade, then change your password through email. Then change your password.
But not through that.
No, not through that. Just change your email password, okay? Okay, Carl.
I just wanted to tell folks that I have a class starting in May 23rd. It's two Saturdays on aging and the brain, and we have a lot of interesting developments, stem cell trials, new understanding about how the brain works, and it's going to be packed with all kinds of interesting information. May 23rd, May 30th, two Saturday mornings. Love to have you come and take part in the discussion.
We're looking at the time.
It's 9 to noon, and it's going to be at the Wake campus, room 7.
Is there a flyer there? There are flyers. Highly recommended. Okay, so let's, Abraham.
I just want to wish for all the mothers. And beyond. Happy Mother's Day.
Okay. Let's turn off the lights and do a little meditation here. Let's see. What do I want to tell you? Given that the subtitle of today's class, I changed the working title to Enlightenment for Dummies. certainly one leading, I'll tell you. I thought we'd sit with sit to begin with, and everything today hopefully is going to tie to what we already know. So instead of being a kind of way up there abstract discussion of enlightenment, it's going to tie to that which we're already aware of, that of which we're already aware. So. I hope you can all see this. I redrew it twice because none of my colored pens work very well. But I'm going to be referring to this and also to that. Would somebody let Terry in?
It's open.
It's open?
Yeah, there's a door open.
Yeah, what's that on the other board?
I'll tell you about that after we sit, okay? Okay, so the you can do whatever you want in these 10 minutes that is meditative, but what I would suggest for today is just as you notice things, okay, you'll be noticing your breathing because you'll be returning attention to your breathing. Keep coming back to your breathing. Feel how your whole body participates in the breathing. Feel the movement of your belly and front of your body as you breathe. Just keep returning attention to that. And let yourself soften and open. Those are the basic instructions. Pay attention to the breathing and just let yourself soften and open. And you will notice other things. Thoughts will run through your mind. There'll be sounds. There'll be emotions maybe. Things will enter your awareness. Notice the things that enter your awareness. But also, notice that you are noticing those things. Oh, I'm hearing a sound now. Oh, I'm thinking a thought now. Oh, I'm paying attention to my breathing now. So you're not only noticing this, this, and this as they occur, and this, you're also noticing that you're noticing. Now, one way to do this is by using labeling, which I've taught many of you, and you know about. Labeling is a way to call out to yourself what you're noticing. Feet. Belly. Breathing. Hands. Eyes. Emotion. Thought. Feet. Rocking. Wrist. So I'm just calling out to myself the predominant thing that I'm aware of. If I do that for a minute or so, it makes my awareness a lot sharper. So the point about this is, I guess there are three levels here, or three aspects. First aspect, keep returning attention to your breathing, relaxing, softening, opening. Progress just more and more, softening and opening. Come back to your breathing. Second level, be aware of the things that enter your awareness. Don't do anything about them, just notice. There's a thought, there's another thought, there's another thought, there's another thought. Where's my breathing? Breathing. There's my breathing. There's another thought. Just notice what's entering your awareness and notice that you are noticing those things. Ah, my attention is going there. It's 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 going there. So, breathe, soften, open, notice what's happening, and notice that you're noticing what's happening. This is not an intellectual exercise. This is actually tracking your experience. It's not a bunch of thoughts. This is actually noticing what's happening. Okay, let's try that, and then the ramifications of that will take us all the way to enlightenment.
See you there.
In 10 easy steps, which I'll get to you. We'll get there. Okay, Anine.
So, isn't it noticing the one noticing?
Not yet. Okay, you can do that too. You can also add a fourth thing, which is notice who's noticing the process of noticing. So you can notice this, you can notice this, and you can notice this.
Right.
Okay. So I'll ring the bell in 10 minutes, okay? So, two comments first, or a question. Could you tell the difference between when you were aware of your breathing and when you were lost in thought? That's the crucial difference. What you're practicing is coming out of habitual absorption in thought to being present with breathing and whatever else is happening. And that getting lost in thought and coming back to the breathing, that's the process of practice. We'll draw that out in a minute further. It occurred to me while I was sitting the following words. The student says to the master, "What is enlightenment?" The master says, "Attention." The student says, "I don't understand. Could you say more? What is enlightenment?" The master says, "Attention. Attention."
Yeah.
That will become clearer as we talk. Okay, so a question and two questions. So Carrie and then Len, and then off we go on our enlightenment journey.
This may be redundant, but I'll just go.
Say again, ask again?
Our ultimate goal is primarily.
Okay, so Carrie asked, is the ultimate goal that we're primarily into our breathing? And the answer is no. The breathing is just a technique. It's just something to get you out of absorption in thought into present awareness. So if you keep paying attention to your breathing, you have to come out of being lost in thought into something happening at present. You could use hearing if you didn't like your breathing. You could use your left little toe. You could use the feeling of your nose. But those things are difficult to discern. Breathing is rhythmic, it's central, so it's a good thing to focus on. But it's just a technique to come out of being lost in thought into being present. But again, when you're lost in thought for a whole lifetime, then you think that you turn this over in your mind. You don't come out of thought. Which is why the instruction is to actually physically feel your breathing. Sometimes I put my hand there to actually physically feel it. Otherwise, I can be confident that I am in my breathing as I'm thinking about it, and I'm really just in a thought about my breathing. This will become clearer as we go along today. Len.
Spence, I'm pretty good at identifying sounds when I'm meditating, and I'm pretty positive that somebody on the right-hand side of the room was reading a newspaper, and I'd like to hear from that person how that actually enhances their meditative process, or I'd like to learn how to do that myself.
Okay.
I don't have time to read a newspaper.
I'm going to address that just tangentially, which is, when you sit down to meditate, and something is happening, you have a choice. You can either, if something is happening, if your bathroom toilet is running, you can get up, turn the toilet, fix the toilet, and go back to sitting. So there are some times when you choose to do something about what you're aware of. But that's generally the secondary instruction. The primary instruction is, once you sit down, if the roof falls on your head, you pay attention to the sensations of the roof falling on your head. You let go of the impulse to correct the world. So if there's something happening when you sit, you just notice what you're aware of and how you react to it. You notice the whole process. But the ultimate goal is not to be able to sit in perfect bliss in a cave. The ultimate goal is to be able to move through the world in a mindful way, and oftentimes we can't change the world. All right, let's see. Fred, and then we got to do this, otherwise you won't learn about enlightenment. Okay, Fred.
I don't know if we have anybody or maybe several at more elementary levels of meditation, but I just simply wanted to say, if there are, I entered the world of meditation, 10, 15 years ago, and 2 weeks into Spencer's class, I realized that a host of very negative voices and thoughts were leaving. I was not being bothered by them. So that was big to me. Only later did I learn that one could go deeper and do more.
Yeah, at first, when you sit to meditate, you just become aware of what has been happening all along, and a lot of it is startling and unnerving sometimes. Okay, two announcements. Annie?
You said sometimes we can't, to let go of the impulse to fix something we're aware of. Because we can't change the world, but the thing is, when we do become mindful, we are changing the world as we do that.
And also, there are things that occur to you in meditation that, when you come out of meditation, you say, "I'm going to do something about that because it deserves to be done."
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a question of being inactive; it's a question of choosing one's activity, so that one doesn't act always. In response to, and one doesn't act unconsciously and destructively. So an enlightened person is, well, you'll see. Two announcements. First, next week, I haven't fully decided yet what we're going to do next week, or finally decided, but I think we're probably going to have a long experience, which means you need to bring something to write with and something to write on so that it can be handy, like a book you can put a piece of paper on, or a clipboard, or just something that you can write down your experience right after we come out of it. So please remember to do that, to bring some writing materials. Second, it's not finalized yet, but it's likely to happen. I want to tell you what's going to happen next fall with this class. First of all, it's going to have, the class will happen in this room at this time again, so it'll still be the same class in that respect. But first of all, CLL is going from $5 an hour minimum to $6 an hour minimum in the fall. That's been known since the start of CLL. We have to start covering more of our expenses. The City College covers a lot of our expenses, and slowly we're going to have to transition to the fact that we cover more. So it's going from $5 an hour to $6 an hour, which means that each class session next fall in this class, instead of being $7.50, will be $9. Okay. And there are going to be 10 class sessions, not 8, in the fall for this class. So it will be $90. If that's a problem for you, there are partial and complete scholarships. Find out how to get them. That's what they're there for.
What do we have to sign up for?
I don't know. You went to the office and you asked them, well, how do we do this? So it'll be $90 for 10 sessions. But it won't be called consciousness class.
What will
it
be called?
It will be called... It will be called the positive psychology of mindfulness, happiness, and well-being, and it will be an actual class with a book, with suggested assignments, with the latest research. What it will be will be the course that I teach at City College in 16 weeks on positive psychology, adapted for this group and enriched for this group. So the book we'll be using, some of you have already read, we will read it, I've read it numerous times, we will read it in a much more disciplined, critical way than you probably have read it before. That book is Authentic Happiness by Martin Seligman.
Where did you get the book at?
We'll probably have them in the bookstore. You can also get them used everywhere. It's been a bestseller for 12 years. Anyway, we're going to use that book. Don't run out and get it now. I would suggest that you wait and read it chapter by chapter with us in a guided way. We'll also have suggested assignments every week, so it will be a course. There will be no examinations, no grades, but it will be much more focused on how you become a happier, more fulfilled human being using all those materials. Again, that's what. Oh, and it's not going to be a class, apparently. It's going to be a special event. like a 10-session mind supermind, which means it will get its own section of the catalog and probably the back cover also, so it will be prominently featured. Which means that you want to sign up soon after it becomes available, because maybe it's kind of a popular topic and it might fill up.
We need an acronym.
What?
We need an acronym.
Okay, so come on, we gotta work now, okay? Alright, so here we go. First I gotta turn the lights on.
Spencer, will the sessions be 1.5 hours?
Yes, it'll be exactly the same. It'll be 10:15 to 11:45 in this room every Friday, okay? Well, starting beginning of September.
The first Friday of September?
I guess, whenever they schedule it. I have no idea.
When does this new schedule come out?
I don't know. Okay. All right, so here goes. Where is my abracadabra? Okay. Okay. Get rid of this because I don't need it. Okay, enlightenment enlightenment for dummies. Here we go. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read a little bit, just a paragraph to start, and then toward the end I'll read more because we'll be getting into such deep water that I can't swim. Then I'll use my own words, so I won't be reading much. But I will be. I just want to start it out with a little reading from Coming Home. So for...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
For the reading, I want to use this. For the rest of it, I want to shout. So this is Coming Home by Lex Hickson, the book that we used some weeks prior. This particular chapter that I'm going to be discoursing about is the 10 Seasons of Enlightenment. It's the Zen Oxfording Pictures. Many of you are familiar with the Zen Oxfording Pictures. I'm going to talk about them probably in a little different way than you've heard before. Hopefully a more accessible way. So this is just the first paragraph in that chapter before I go into my own words. Enlightenment is not an isolated attainment of ancient or legendary sages, but a process flowering through members of every culture. A process in which our consciousness gradually becomes transparent to its own intrinsic nature. I thought that was a beautiful way to say it. Our consciousness becomes transparent to its own intrinsic nature. Various traditions have developed subtle languages to describe phases of this process. These dimensions of enlightenment are not scholastic projections. They reflect the complex tissue of awareness as it gradually becomes purified or clarified by awareness of itself. So it's about becoming aware of awareness, attention to attention. The seeker of enlightenment must become as close an observer of consciousness as the Eskimo is of snow conditions. Enlightenment is not simply an expanse of whiteness any more than snow is, but a process developing through various seasonal changes. The 10 seasons of enlightenment are invoked by the Oxfording pictures evolved in 12th century China, in which the spiritual quest is depicted as the search for an elusive ox that roams wild in the rainforest. The ox symbolizes the intrinsic nature of consciousness, the mystery of what we are, what the Zen masters call our true nature. Okay? So that's the preamble. I may choose this again. Tell me if you can't hear me.
Ox,
O-X, like big bull.
Word?
What?
Ox
herding picture. Herding the ox. Okay.
So the ox symbolizes what we're looking for, our enlightenment, our realization of our true nature. And again, this comes from 12th century China. And what it is it's a map of our progress as we move along the journey of understanding ourselves better. It has 10 phases. And so I'm going to tell you about each of these 10 phases, hopefully in a way that makes them accessible to you. First phase is called seeking the ox. And I'll write the phases down here.
I'm spatially challenged. I hope it will work in. All right, maybe I'll do it this way. Because it won't work that way.
I'm writing down the phases.
He needs 10 to go to the upper left corner.
No, I'm going to go 1 to 10 now. What's I don't understand. What?
Right.
Two columns didn't work. The titles would be so large that I couldn't make a second column. So that's why I'm going one column. I really kind of know what I'm doing. All right. So, seeking the ox. Dante's Divine Comedy starts with the words, "In the middle of my life, I found myself lost in a dark forest." What is that? And then that takes him on his journey of enlightenment, which he thinks is going to be up the mountain, which is actually down through hell and then through purgatory and then up the mountain, right? What does this mean? It means that some of us, at some point in our lives, as we are satisfying or have satisfied our imperatives to grow as people and have families and have careers, there's a question that arises in us, which is, what is this all about and who am I really? The spiritual question comes up. Not for everybody. In this culture, probably not for a lot of people because they're too busy trying to have a family and put a roof over their head. They don't have time for the spiritual question. But some people are going to ask, is this all there is? Is this the whole deal? You just live and then you die? You know, what's really going on here? Is there something behind all this? That's the question that arises in bright people, and that's seeking the ox. That's, I got to find out something here that is not obvious, that is crucial to my well-being and deep satisfaction. Okay? So that's obvious. Second, so many of you are seeking the ox, and you go and you try to find out, you know, various ways. So the second, and this already distinguishes the seeker of enlightenment from a normal person who doesn't have this passion for understanding. Second phase, second season of enlightenment is finding the tracks. Oh, the commentary on seeking the ox is, it is fundamentally flawed. The search is fundamentally futile because the ox has never been lost. You can't lose your true nature. You can't find your true nature. You are your true nature. Okay? So this is a question of going through all these phases in order to finally realize that it was all a futile exercise. But by going through the futile exercise, you get transmuted. You get changed such that you are who you are, but you have a knowledge of who you are rather than being who you are without that knowledge. So it's like T.S. Eliot in the Four Quartets. You come back to the place you started, but you know it for the first time. It's exactly that. Okay, so second phase of this process is finding the tracks. You don't know You go everywhere trying to find out what is this, and you start to listen to people who say they know. You start to read the wisdom writings and the spiritual understandings from various cultures. You take classes. You try to find out in the usual way, using your intellect. And that's helpful because it gives you the confidence to proceed. But you realize that there's something mysterious that these people are talking about that you don't seem to understand with your mind. So the tracks of the ox are the mental representations of what it is that you're looking for. And that's where these classes are about. That's where many of us are, is trying to understand this. So if these first phases are kind of more accessible, then things get a little more esoteric.
And what is this all part of? What's the larger context for this?
The process of enlightenment?
No, the Chinese something. You said it's a Chinese...
Oh, it's the ox herding pictures. The ox herding teachings, if you will.
Okay, thank you.
But there are illustrations that go with these that people pass along. Okay, third phase. First glimpse of the ox. So you read the spiritual teachings, you listen to spiritual teachers, you do practice to try to find out what this is that you're looking for, this basic true nature. And at some point, you have an experience which is a first glimpse of the actual thing that you're seeking. Now let's go over here. Okay. In the second phase, finding the tracks, you're thinking, you're in your thoughts. In the third phase, and when people sit down and they learn meditation, they stay in their thoughts. You just think about your breathing, you think about what's going on, you try to figure it out, but you never really come out of thought. How long does that process of staying in thought last? It depends on how smart you are. There's an inverse relationship, I think, in my own experience between how smart you are and how long it takes. There's a direct relationship. As the smarter you are, the longer it takes to get out of your thoughts. So I have students that have been thinking about this for 15 years, and they practice assiduously, and they're just so smart that they can't figure it out, but they can't stop trying to figure it out. Typically what happens is, the Zen people give you a koan, a riddle, like, show me your face before your mother and father conceived you. Just think about that. And finally, your brain fries, and you go, I don't know. And then they go, this actually happened to me. One Zen master said, when I said, I can hope. Zen master said, very good. You only keep dono mai, you be enlightened. That was Sen Sang, the celebrated Zen master, Joan Halifax's guru. Okay. At a certain point in the process of learning mindfulness, you come back here and you hear a thought or see a thought and you go, oh my God, that's a thought. And you realize that you are separate from the thought. Prior to that, when you pay attention to your breathing, the thoughts come with you. In other words, you're paying attention to your breathing, but you're thinking about your breathing. At some point, you are thinking a thought, and you're absolutely clear. That's a thought over there, and I'm over here. First glimpse of the ox. Some of you had that. By the way, this is wrong. I'm going to come back to it. There's a deeper level of it. But for right now, follow my argument, and then I'll circle back. Okay. Oh, yeah, disclaimer about this. There's probably a lot of deeper levels to this. I'm just telling you what I know. Okay. So you have just a direct experience of true nature. And that direct experience is an experience of you antecedent to thought. You who have the thought, not you who are thinking. That one, not that one. So then what do? Catching the ox. This is a little more problematic because what you need to learn to do now is go from spending 100% of your time in the usual you that you've spent your whole life in to a tiny glimpse of a different, more fundamental you, an awareness in which these things happen. Now you need to go to where you can reliably come to this more fundamental way of being. You need to develop the witness. And the witness isn't a thought process. It's an ability to take one step back from the whole thought, feeling, sensation process and just watch it. And that takes that's where discipline really has to happen. That doesn't happen by itself. That takes a long time to come to be able to sit down, find your breathing, and in a few minutes maybe or less or more, to come to a position of being the sky and watching the weather and being absolutely clear that you're the sky and that's the weather. That you're going from here to here. Ken Wilber says the whole process of enlightenment is a shifting of the center of gravity from the personality to the essence. From here to here. I'm going to come back to these, as I said. This is just a first pass. Okay. Fifth season of enlightenment. So far, I hope I'm not losing you. But this is these are words that you're familiar with. This is practices that you're trying. But so far, this is pretty accessible. By the way, you can visit. This is where you habitually are. You can visit various of these levels without having to go through the whole thing or stay there. I think you'll find that when we talk about the higher levels of enlightenment, you kind of know what they are. You've kind of been there. You just don't hang out there. This is your usual way of functioning we're talking about. All these levels are accessible potentially at any point. So fifth is taming the ox. So what happens as you continue to practice, and practice is what you need, whatever practice, I'm using mindfulness, whatever your practice is, all the teachers say, you have to keep doing your practice. That's what makes the progress. You're rewiring your brain. So whether you use this metaphor or any of the other metaphors, the point is you have to settle on a practice and do it and do it and do it and do it if you really want your brain to change, if you really want your outlook to change. So taming the ox involves, instead of struggling to come out of this and establish the witness and having that witness kind of go away a lot, when you tame the ox, you spend more time here than here. This becomes something that you're familiar with. It becomes much easier to be the witness and not be caught up in this stuff. It becomes a natural relaxation into the witness, not something that you have to hold on to. So the ox, which was difficult, which was wild, becomes tame. And now you establish a friendly relationship with this perspective. It becomes familiar, it becomes easy. You slip into it easily. There's a long way to go here. Six. Okay. Um, may have seen these little figurines of a little person riding a great big ox. They sell them. That's riding the ox home. Okay. Riding the ox home means as you adopt this perspective as the perspective in which you move through life, as this becomes, no, you're no longer here. You're no longer this person. Now you're fundamentally this person with this as an overlay. You've got the personality on, but mostly you live from here. And what that does is it takes you toward home, toward enlightenment. So by just being the witness of your experience rather than being caught up in your experience, it gradually transforms you. It gradually purifies you such that this becomes less and less compelling and less opaque. It becomes something, your personality becomes something that you wear lightly, that you see through easily, that you don't act from. So that's the riding the ox home. You're more and more becoming the essential being that you saw, your true nature. Seventh season. Ox forgotten, self alone. Now, prior to this, there has been a distinction in your experience between your personality, yourself, and your true nature, the ox, between your thoughts, feelings, and sensations, and your awareness itself, pure awareness. So there's been, you started out here without even knowing anything about this. Then you got a hint of this. Then you moved gradually through your own spiritual and your own disciplined efforts to this, regarding this and not being bound by this, to now there's no distinction between the two. This has fallen away. So you are just this. So there's no ox that is your true nature in contradistinction to your personality. Those things, this is gone. So you're just you. This is they call this the ordinary state, the state where the sage becomes absolutely ordinary. Okay. I'm going to circle back here.
So it's another way to put the words you have on number seven there, ox dissolves into self.
Or self dissolved into ox, really.
Well, but the ox was exterior.
No, the ox is your true nature. So the self, this, has dissolved into this,
right.
But you don't call it the ox anymore. It's just me.
Right.
It's just the self. So the wording actually should have been self-forgotten, ox alone, but they don't do that. You know? This is the self, this is the ox. Now you brought the two together, so it's really the ox we're talking about, but they say it this way. They call it ox forgotten self alone. But really it should be, again, this is where you're coming from. This is the ox, right? This is what we identified as the ox.
It's the self.
So, but it's all, the
it's
self
the
used,
time problem.
This used to be the self, this used to be the ox. Now we're just calling both of them ox. No, both of them self.
Okay,
but wait, I got... okay, quickly, because I need to go further. Okay, Michael and then Abraham.
Okay, at what point in this metaphor, I think it's number six, where through the practice, self or awareness can actually change the thoughts and feelings to replace, say, very negative and...
Okay.
You know, where does that
the question?
From?
Okay, the question is where can... From here, you work on this to make it better. And the traditional answer is, don't do that. It's not a question of making you have a better personality. It's a question of enlightenment. And the personality is not where you want to hang out. You want to dissolve the personality.
Now, from your point of view and my point of view, the minute you learn to be to witness this, there's going to be work to be done. And I'm going to do that work. I'm going to change my crazy thoughts to be less crazy. I'm going to work on my feelings to let them flow. I'm going to work on my body to make it healthier. So the minute I have this perspective, I'm going to. My goal isn't enlightenment. My goal is to live fully as a healthy, happy human being. And if enlightenment happens, that's my karma, but I'm not going after it, because you can't go after it, as I'll talk to you about. So the point is, from a Western point of view, at number three already, you can start to move here, or number four especially, you can start to move here. And number five gives you a great platform to change this. But from a traditional point of view, this is a waste. You don't want to build this. You don't want this to become to work better. You want this to go... Okay, Abraham. And then, Peg, but then I got to go on.
Okay.
I mean, fast.
In this process, aren't you depicting some kind of struggle?
It's only a struggle at points. It's a struggle at four. At five, it's a friendliness. At six, it's an ease. So most of this is a process of not trying, of opening to deeper and deeper levels of ease. So the struggle is only at point four, okay, of this process. Peg and then I'm going to go on.
The two words that came up for me at our first sitting today were trust and allow. And to me, it's like getting from that spot to that. When my busy hamster mind wants to keep on spinning, I just say trust and allow the quietness to open.
Those words are excellent words to have in mind as you sit. Those are words that you hear a lot of teachers say. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you that everything I told you was wrong. No, everything I told you was wrong. It's part of it. This is what I used to, how I used to understand this process. Now I have to tell you about my one and only, after all these years of practice, enlightenment experience. Okay. And it only lasted, it was very modest, and it only lasted 2.5 hours. But let me tell you what happened, okay, and how I re-understood this in a deeper way. Maybe 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I went to a Ting Shaw concert. Ting Shaw is a group of five musicians in the Santa Barbara area who get together once a season and bring their 100 or 120 instruments, all these esoteric and wonderful instruments, and put them out in a big pile and invite maybe 50 people. Well, they invite whoever, the first 50 people to sign up. They invite, for $20, they invite you to come to their impromptu concert. What you do is you come, typically it's held at a place like the Episcopalian Church at... State and Mitchell Terena, and there are two rooms. That's the church that's like a cathedral, and there are two. There's a labyrinth out front, and there are two rooms. We don't use a sanctuary, but there are two adjacent nice rooms that one of them is for the ceremony, another for the concert. So I went there. You go there, and there's usually a seasonal. There's a little altar, and there's a seasonal ceremony. And then you go into the main room and you sit or lie around the instruments, and for about a half an hour they play these amazing sounds, and you can either just let go or you can meditate or whatever. That's really nice people that come there. So I went, because I used to go fairly frequently, I still go occasionally, and went into the first room where people are sitting waiting for the thing to happen, and I sat down and I thought, I'll start meditating a little bit, but not really very seriously, because I was kind of looking for who was around there, you know, and it's kind of pretty, and I was just finding my breathing. And then something happened, which is, and I wouldn't have, I couldn't know this, because if you haven't had the experience, you don't know it. But what happened was, the layer of self that is between me and everything else went away. Now, I didn't even know I had a layer of self between me and everybody else, but I can feel it now. Once I had this experience, now I can't not have the experience. So what happened was it just went away, this layer of filter.
that I filter the world and that I filter me going out into it went away. And I was sitting there and I knew it went away. I mean, it just went away. And I went, oh, this is enlightenment. I mean, I'm perfectly lucid. It's enlightenment. And so I just kind of looked. And everything was not, it was very clear. And everything was as it was. I mean, it was just, people were doing what they were doing. And I was, you know, just watching the whole thing. And then I did the seasonal ceremony with the altar. And then I went in and I listened to the concert. And then I walked home with this guy and said, are you walking home? I walk about a mile and a half home. And he wanted to talk about what was going on in his life. And I just walked with him and talked with him. And it was very ordinary. But the whole time I thought, this is what enlightenment is. It's so cool. I mean, you know, it's so nice. I mean, everything was lovely. It really was lovely. Whatever was happening was okay with me. And if there had been a car with a flat tire, it would have helped. Flat tire. So, I mean, I had no program. It was just, and I thought, I mean, I know this will go away. I mean, I had thoughts. I had a personality. Sort of. I didn't have a personality, but I had thoughts. And I'm like, this will go away, but I'll just experience it for as long as I experience it. How cool. And went away after a couple of, you know, 2.5 hours. And what it made me understand is when they're talking about first glimpse of the ox, so that's my enlightenment experience. I'm sorry, there were no angels, there was no one. But that's because this is what they call in Zen Kensho, K-E-N-S-H-O, first enlightenment experience. This is what, some people have this experience and they go out and teach. And the Zen masters say, be careful of those people. Because what happens is they have an experience of egolessness, of not having this layer of me between yourself and the world. And they realize it's enlightenment. And then, because they're not very practiced, ego comes back and co-opts the experience. And they go, I'm enlightened now. Carl Jung talked about this when he talked about the journey of individuation, which was his way of talking about enlightenment. He said at a certain point there's going to be an inflation. That is, at a certain point you're going to realize that you've realized something profound, and the ego is that's still around is going to get inflated because of that. He said you've got to watch that. But that's why a lot of these teachers do bad things, because their ego has not been fully dissolved until it re-enters at kind of this higher level and causes them to use their powers or position in a bad way. So anyway, I realize this is just first glimpse of the ox. This is just your first enlightenment experience. It's not just that. It's like, it's this ain't there anymore. Okay? It's just this. But then, the question is, how do you go from that first to the higher stages? That's where catching the ox becomes important. They say that if you want to sustain that experience that I had for such a brief time, you have to use the whip and the rope to discipline the ox, to catch and then tame the ox. So for catching the ox, you want to catch the ox? You want to have more than that little experience? Here's the instruction, the traditional instruction. We must now hold and embrace the ox, sustain our perception of true nature with such disciplines as, this is all you need to do, total compassion, perfect nonviolence, and unwavering truthfulness. So that's all you need to do. Total compassion, perfect nonviolence, unwavering truthfulness. Because, now why do they say this? Because if you start to stop your love or say things to make things, you know, to make yourself look better, be less than entirely truthful, it stimulates this stuff. Buddha's, you know, the Four Noble Truths of the Buddha, first noble truth is unenlightened life is suffering. Second noble truth is there's a way out of suffering called enlightenment. Third noble truth is the way out of suffering is to let go into present awareness. Fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path. How do you let go out of suffering into present awareness? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those eight things in the Eightfold Path, they're not moral precepts. God will get you if you don't do this. You know, that's Western thought. They are, if you want this to shut up, then live according to the Eightfold Path so you don't keep stimulating the ego. If you tell a lie, then you got to figure out, I want to tell that lie, I've got to tell, well, there's a lot of thought involved, you know. If you're unwilling to live fully, then your feelings get all kind of out of balance. And so the Eightfold Path is just a way to quiet this down. And that's what I just talked about, those instructions. So that you're not generating this. Because remember, first glimpse of the ox is just this. Now, you got to find a way to not generate this stuff. So we got to go back through this again. Catching the ox, riding the ox home. Ox forgotten self alone. Okay, so at a deeper level, I understand this process. Not that I do it, but I understand it. Okay? So there we are so far. What's next? I mean, you would think that's enlightenment, right? And this is a profound sage. That is, then when you meet such a person, and I have met such a person, there's no personality. There's just awareness and open-heartedness and clarity. There's no barrier between you and that person, between that person and the world. They're just available. But that's not the end of it. I hope I'm not losing you. This is all stuff that we touch, that we understand, that it's not, as Wilbur says, you know, it's closer to you than your nose. Even the old instructions, I wouldn't get a chance to read them, but even the instructions here say, it's only your own confusion that makes you unaware of that which is always there. You can't, it's your true nature. You can't not have it. You know, you can't not be it. Okay, so 8. Both ox and self forgotten. Okay, so this both ox and self forgotten is an eighth stage. This is the stage of the Zen circle. This is the way they symbolize this. I didn't do it so well, but it's a circle that isn't quite closed. Okay. And now I have to read a little bit because I have to read a little bit. Okay, just a little. So what is this stage of the Zen circle, the empty circle, both ox and self forgotten? This will be. These will be very brief readings, by the way. Okay, can you hear me well enough?
Yes.
Good. The sage of the previous level, number 7, had no personal sense of his own or her own holiness, but does entertain a sense of reverence for true nature, as expressed through her own conscious being. That is, in the 7th level, ox forgotten self alone, there's a reverence for the nature of being. You're standing outside the great mystery. You're standing right next to the great mystery. But you're not yet identical to the great mystery. You have no personality to separate you from essence, from true nature, but there's still a personal being experiencing true nature. true nature and a reverence for that true nature. Another way to say it is you're in the presence of God, but you're not God yet. Instead of blending completely with truth, you're tasting sugar rather than being sugar. Those of you who know Ruby, I think, talk that way. Instead of blending completely with true nature, she remains in a contemplative mood and experiences a bliss that still retains a trace of two-ness. This is all about healing two-ness, making oneness, getting closer and closer to oneness. But at the eighth level, represented by empty space, there is only awakened enlightenment. No contemplator and no contemplation. No serenity and no disturbance. Awakened enlightenment cannot assert I am Buddha any more than it can assert I am not Buddha. Any assertion implies the existence of someone who frames the assertion. Here there is no one, not even the sage. Both ox and self-forgotten is represented by the traditional Zen circle, the single brush stroke leaving the paper shortly before the point of closure. If there were not that opening, further growth could not occur. So what beyond this, being one with everything, being not only in God's, but being God, you know, what beyond this?
Return to the source.
You notice that there's still a two-ness. I didn't go through how each step heals a two-ness into a oneness. For example, this and this eventually become this, but there's further steps because this is still separate from everything else, etc. The two-ness comes into oneness. So how does this heal this, the two-ness in this? You notice that this is empty. So how does this state of absolute emptiness and absolute unity interact? How does this go together with the world? All the stuff of the world. This is a complete empty circle. Where is you and me and everything else? This is a transcendent state, but if it's a transcendent state, it implies something that has been transcended. So, that good again?
Yeah.
Okay. The ninth Oxfordian picture is called Return to the Source. Mountains and pine groves, clouds and waves are appearing out of nowhere. The open space of emptiness is melting into a kind of springtime. Formless awareness is growing back into forms again, without losing its formless or perfectly unitary nature. So emptiness and fullness are unmanifest and manifest are blending into one another. Out of nothing, out of the pregnant void, shunyata, comes manifestation, comes the world, which, as it comes into form, doesn't lose its formless nature. Another way to say this in argument in Western terms is God makes the world without stopping to be. God makes the world, but the world is God. It's one and many at the same time. Another way to say it. Okay, more about this. Enlightenment simply is the blue lake and the green mountain. In earlier stages, there has been a dramatic quality of realization, But in the ninth stage, this drama fades, leaving only freshness or plainness. The waters are blue, the mountains are green. So this is a stage in which everything is, it's all the same thing and it's different. It's material and non-material, it's the same and different. It's one and many. It is form and formlessness at the same time. It's the world and emptiness at the same time. All right, let's go to the 10th picture, and then we'll puzzle a little more. Okay, 10th picture. Okay, here's the 10th Oxford picture.
Was it the world and what?
Say again?
The world and what?
It's the world. Say again?
The world and what?
The world and...
Emptiness.
Oh. Okay, so 10. The 10th picture, the 10th season of enlightenment, entering the marketplace with helping hands.
Beautiful.
Oh, yes, best.
Beautiful.
Okay. The 10th Oxfordian picture is called Entering the Marketplace with Helping Hands. Awakened enlightenment takes the form of a fat, jolly rustic. Guy with a big belly and a loincloth and a wine board, who wanders from village to village, from mundane situation to mundane situation. His body is overflowing with life energy. His being is full of compassionate love. His open hands express perfect emptiness. He has gone completely beyond, not to move further away from humanity, but to return completely to the human world. He has even abandoned the source as a citadel where enlightenment may subtly isolate itself. It is not he that wanders about, but simply the activity of awakened enlightenment. He does not experience any intrinsic difference between himself and the villagers, or even the village landscape. And by his or her presence as simply a service function, simply a willingness to help and a love, everyone that interacts with this sort of person, their growth is stimulated to the extent that they can open. In other words, he or she, by just wandering around, opens everyone continually by being present in this way. So this is a bodhisattva. This is a person who comes back from the source, from God, from enlightenment, and comes into the world just to help even the blades of grass become enlightened. And how does she or he do that? Just by being in the world in this way, in this selfless, giving, loving way. And we touch that. You know, we're like, you know, there are times when we give to one another that there's not a self there. You don't do it out of, well, it's a good person I'm giving. It's just something that needs to be done, and your whole being does it. With complete openness to that process, complete love in that process. That's entering the marketplace with helping hands. And the person in that at that level is not holding darshan. Is that person is not, you know, in a temple and telling you what that's people at a different level. This is a person that, I don't know, giving change at 7-Eleven, working behind it, you know, bagging groceries at Ralph's. Wherever they are, there you interact with them, and it just makes you a bigger person by the interaction. So that's the basic framework of the seasons, I have more to tell you. Okay, Peg, look up.
What came to you, you said that was giving when the intentions are clean of giving without any expectations.
That's at a lower level, actually. That's a beautiful thing to do, but this is a person that doesn't have a person. This is a person that doesn't have intentions. This is giving. Okay, the person at the 10th level isn't intending anything because the person isn't there. The person is just service. It's a giving function. Okay? Word.
I heard a high Tibetan Lama who actually has a monastery in Tibet now, and he was here at the Unitarian Church over the weekend, and he said that in the West, we probably should focus on the first three oxurating ones, and that's probably the best we can do.
So did you hear that? Gordon said, in the West, we should probably focus on the first three. I actually kind of think they sold us a little short, that I think in the West, we should probably focus on the first seven anyway, so that we come into the world, we move through the world in a very open, loving way and helpful way. Okay, can I give you a little more?
Yes.
Okay, just a little more. Now, we'll probably go a couple minutes later, okay? So we'll probably go till about 10 up. I've got to tell you that the second half of this chapter is about the letters between a young Japanese girl named Yeko, Y-A-K-O, and her teacher, Harada Roshi, H-A-R-A-D-A, Harada Roshi. And she is 25 years old. She's very sickly. She practiced Zazen for 5 years in her bed. And Harada Roshi would come and visit her. And in the last 5 days before she dies, she goes through all the higher stages of enlightenment and writes him letters, and he writes her letters back in these last 5 days of her life. This is a true story, contemporary woman. He's a true people. So it's fascinating what they write back and forth. I mean, as she goes up these levels, her personality, her way of expressing changes. But I just want to read very few things from that dialogue between them. Very few things. So Yeko proceeds to describe the ordinariness of return to the source, the ninth phase of enlightenment. This is her words. Can you hear me? Yeah? Is it okay? I used to think how grand one must become upon enlightenment, and how admirable is she who devotes herself so fully to Buddhist activities that she no longer thinks of herself. But I was so mistaken. Yeko understands that although enlightened, she's an ordinary human being. The pure Buddha activity, which is now consciously focused through her, is simply her full humanity. There's nothing particularly sublime about it. This is Yeko again. Before enlightenment, I was so anxious for it, and I often thought, how noble is she who returns home with peace and contentment. But having come to full enlightenment, I now say to myself, what were you so excited about? Or I have a distinct aversion to being called enlightened. So they talk about the ordinariness of it. The fact that you're chopping wood and carrying water, just like you were before, okay? Harada Roshi characterizes Yeko's level of realization as that condition of absolute naturalness, where the mutual interpenetration of the world of discrimination and the world of equality is so thorough that one is consciously aware of neither. So That and that are so interpenetrated that one is not consciously aware of either. Having disappeared into the source, there is neither the fragmenting ignorance of discrimination, your mind chopping the world up, nor the unifying wisdom that perceives the equality of all phenomena. There's neither of those. In the center of the sun, there is neither night nor day. As Yeko exclaimed in an earlier letter, I am in the center of the great way. All is radiance, pure radiance. And you hear that in all the traditions. At a certain point, it's all light. There's a light of a million suns that dissolves you completely. There is nothing but this spiritual principle. Okay. Very last quotes. All beings are already saved, affirms the living Buddha. The actual spiritual power released by this affirmation subtly permeates the awareness of all beings and tangibly intensifies their evolutionary energy. Now, I'll repeat it again to everybody. The person at these highest levels, especially the 10th level, regards everyone as Buddha already. So, different than the West. All beings are already saved, affirms the living Buddha. The actual spiritual power released by this affirmation subtly permeates the awareness of all beings and tangibly intensifies their evolutionary energy. So when someone sees you as already perfect, it intensifies your perfection. And the very last thing in the chapter, for Yeko, at the culmination of enlightenment, there no longer appears any aspirant teacher or transmission. As she reveals to Harada Roshi, all levels of enlightenment have disappeared into Tada, T-A-D-A. Tada literally means in Japanese only or just. As the Zen master advises us, when you eat, just eat. When you walk, only walk. Tada is perfect transparency expressed through dailiness. Tada is just Buddhahood, only true nature. There is nothing else, writes Yeko. The further I advance on the supreme way, the more exalted it becomes. I have experienced that Tada itself is perfection. All sense of doing is left behind in Tada, and yet no detail of any heavenly or earthly sphere is ignored by Tada, which is caring and careful. As Yeko writes, this is if you want to be enlightened, I promise to act with the utmost care in every detail of my life. Not only is every sentient being Buddha, every detail is Buddha. Enlightenment for dummies. We are adjourned. Okay.